You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing, however you subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil, who recently wrote a great piece on Dion Waiters' offseason. We'll get to that later on, plus what Zach Lowe expects from the Heat this season, but let's start with some news. The Athletic's Shams Charania reports that the Heat still have a level of interest in Thunder point guard Chris Paul. As they are set to enter the NBA season, he adds that while Paul and the Heat shared mutual interest during the offseason, that the two sides couldn't agree on a deal during the summer, and that Miami will instead just see how the season starts before engaging in any more trade discussions. Now, David, what do you make of Miami still being interested in Chris Paul?
I don't think this is particularly news-breaking, to be honest with you. I always thought that the interest was there, that it was just a matter of Miami negotiating with Oklahoma City general manager Sam Presti and trying to figure out exactly what they'd be willing to give up in order to take on Chris Paul's contract, which is still, I think, the major sticking point there. There's no denying that Chris is still capable of playing at a high level, I think. And regardless of how he's gone through injury issues over the past, he's still a top point guard. He's a historically great point guard, and I think Miami is always going to be attracted to players like that. The pursuit of Russell Westbrook, who I still think is probably not as effective as Chris Paul is, even given Chris Paul's age, shows that Miami is still always going to be interested in acquiring a superstar player whenever they're available, or whenever they can force the situation into making said player available. And so I'm not really surprised at the pursuit of Chris Paul. I'm more curious about the timeline that Shams mentioned, and I think that kind of makes sense, right? I think we've talked about this before, too. Like, if you want to acquire a player like Chris Paul, that's great. But at the same time, one, you have to negotiate something with Oklahoma City. But secondly, find out who's playing at a high enough level that maybe you could say, well, this might be a player worth keeping.
Yeah, and then specifically who. That who is Justice Winslow, who we spent most of last week talking about. If Justice is the future point guard of this team, well, he needs to go ahead and prove it. And we talked a lot last week about the push and pull there between Justice Winslow and Jimmy Butler, specifically on the offensive end, who handles the ball, how much will Justice actually have the ball? We know he wants the ball. What would that look like if it, say, were Chris Paul playing point guard? Would all of a sudden Jimmy Butler be a little bit more deferential? Would it be better for the Heat's offense in general if you hadn't, like you said, a historically great point guard like Chris Paul, who can still play at a very high level, facilitating that offense and running things? So you go into the season, you see what Justice Winslow looks like. You look at what this point guard situation looks like. And I think that's why this, it lends to that belief that Goran Dragic may be coming off the bench, that Justice Winslow may be handed the point guard duties, and Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and this group could just say, all right, do what you can with this. Because if it doesn't look like it is going to work, then Justice Winslow would probably be one of the pieces you'd have to move in a Chris Paul trade anyway. And so all of a sudden, maybe you make that swap and whatever other pieces need to be thrown in there. I should mention that the Miami Herald's Barry Jackson added to the report on Twitter that Miami's interest is there, but it's, quote, lukewarm, and then adds that OKC would likely have to throw in more draft compensation for the Heat to take on the contract that you mentioned earlier. I mean, it's one of the biggest contracts in NBA history that Chris Paul has. So the Heat would probably be looking for some compensation back. But if you're the Thunder, it also makes sense to wait because you might be hoping to go into the season and then be able to say, hey, look at how well Chris Paul is playing. I don't think we should have to throw in draft picks. He's still a really good player worth this contract.
That's a good point. I hadn't really considered that. Like, we're so focused, I think, and most media in general are kind of focused on who is willing to take on Chris Paul's contract. But there's a reality there that he also provides great value. Well, that he can also provide great impact, even if not at great value, because I think that's more honest. So that's a really fair point, too, is that the Oklahoma City will have something to leverage a little bit there if Chris does play at a high level. And I think, honestly, I think he will. I mean, he's training very hard, also with David Alexander at DBC Fitness, and I think he's going to be primed for a good season. He's healthy again, and, you know, he's looking to prove something. You never want to get a veteran, especially one as accomplished as Paul, and ask him you know, or kind of remind him that he needs to prove something. And I think that's going to be dangerous. So, I mean, Oklahoma City, I've always thought, even after acquiring all these players and making these trades, I thought they were going to be a little bit better than a lot of people expect them to be. And Paul's certainly going to be a part of that.
Yeah, we disagree on that. Yeah, I don't like the Thunder's roster very much at all. But look, you're not the only person that has said that. And if that's the case, if the Thunder start the season off strong, my question is, how bad does Justice Winslow have to be, or how does he have to play to even make this trade,
well,
even close to reality?
I think a big part of it, honestly, is if he starts to duplicate a lot of the behaviors that we've seen from him in the past, that we've seen from Josh Richardson specifically in the past, like they're you know, they've acquired their alpha mentality in Jimmy Butler, obviously, but I think they need to show. They need somebody to step up and say they're willing to handle a part of the workload and be responsible as well. And I don't know that we saw that enough from Josh, unfortunately, which is partly why it was easier to trade him away.
It was clear that Josh had plateaued. And I guess if you see this sort of plateau from Justice, then maybe they would make that sort of trade. And by the way, the Heat have until February, right? The NBA trade deadline isn't until February. So you can kind of see how things go at the beginning of the year, through the rest of the year and into next year, and by January, February, if you've decided, you know what, Justice isn't taking that step that we wanted him to, that we wanted to see, we sort of sense a plateau here, then maybe we will move him for Chris Paul or somebody else completely. I mean, who knows who else could be available by the trade deadline. So I think things are fluid, and I definitely think that the Heat have ideas of pairing Jimmy Butler with a second star. They have looked around the NBA. They understand what's going on with the big twos here and there all across the league, and they only have a big one right now. Now, whether or not Bam or Justice or Tyler Hero or Deion Waiters, who we'll talk about in the next segment, can sort of blossom into that second star remains to be seen. I would bet on that not happening, that those guys playing more, you know, complementary roles, and the Heat somehow going and finding a second star to pair with Jimmy Butler. But again, who knows who that could be?
I think a complementary role would almost be okay or tolerable, at least for the Heat. I think they would be more concerned if Justice in particular starts to show a deferential, you know, a behavior towards Jimmy. Like, he can't defer. He has to be able to say, you know what, I want to put my stamp on this team. I want to do what I can to make an impact. And we've seen moments from that, like that, from Justice in the past, particularly in the playoffs. I remember thinking, you know, watching him against Philadelphia, watching his attitude there, like that was encouraging, because we had seen during the first 3 years of his career that he kind of took a back seat. He was a little passive at times. That was an aggressive version. And you know, I think it translated to some degree last season. But if anything, we should be encouraged by what he told you when you spoke to him a couple weeks ago, that he doesn't see last year as a breakout, that he's ready to break out. And if that's the case, then that should be encouraging, and that's probably, you know, that's probably why Miami doesn't have to make a move for Chris Paul right away.
And I buy it. With Jimmy Butler being there, there's going to be even less attention on Justice Winslow. Defenses are going to be focused on him. They're going to be focused on Bam Adebayo too, because of the threat he is at the rim. I mean, there is a gravity aspect that Bam Adebayo brings to the table that Hassan Whiteside really didn't have at all. I mean, Hassan Whiteside was the opposite of what Bam is. They just let him shoot from 18 feet because that's what Hassan Whiteside liked to do, and Whiteside didn't like to do his homework and get into the post. Bam's the opposite of that. There is going to be a gravity factor there. Things should loosen up for Justice a little bit more. He's probably not going to have to take as many contested jumpers. He'll play on the ball. He'll play off the ball a little bit more. So we'll see. Maybe there is a breakout season coming up for him. But coming up next, how Deion Waiters working with D-Wade's trainer has him poised for a breakout season. You're listening to Locked On Heat.
Long day at work? Still stuck at the office? Treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON.
Zach Lowe is really high on the Miami Heat. We'll talk about that later on. But David, you reported in a piece for Forbes that after working at the same Miami gym that got Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, back on track after injuries, that Deion Waiters is expected to enter this season at his lowest weight ever while wearing a Heat uniform. I think you reported he's expected to be at 215 pounds or thereabouts. Now, David Alexander, the head trainer there at DBC, seemed really optimistic about Deion's season. I think you're buying in as well, no?
Absolutely. I Like, I know there's concerns. I mean, you know, it's been a rocky road for Deion. As much as we've enjoyed having him on the team and had high expectations for him, he just has had a problem being healthy. He came back last season, you know, clearly out of shape, and he's just never really rounded into the kind of shape that we expect him to be at. But this is different. This is a Deion that has something to prove, and he's working with the right guy with the right mentality. As I wrote in the piece, they started off slowly last season just trying to get his confidence back, trying to get him into the kind of shape where he wouldn't incur injury. He was able to play 40-some games without injury after, you know, having fractured his ankle and then having to have surgery in order to repair it. And I think that was an encouraging sign. But now this summer, it was a renewed approach of wanting to say, I have to become better. I have to become more fit, more athletic, more explosive. And I don't think we've seen this version of Deion in a Heat uniform or even when he was with the Cavs when he was younger. So I think he's got that mentality. If we're talking about, you know, Justice Winslow kind of lacking some of that mentality a little bit, or at least potentially lacking it, Deion seems to have it in spades, obviously. You know, he's confident. And as Alexander told me, if you thought he was confident before, he's going to be even more confident now. So look out. That's pretty exciting. I know that scares some people off. I saw some reactions to that on Twitter, you know, kind of like, oh no. You know, there's some concerns there because, you know,
well, now if he has a reason to be confident, that would be good, I would think, and will only lend itself to more confidence.
You know, his body's working right. He, you know, he's able to get some lift off the ground that he hasn't had in a couple seasons. You know, his shooting took some improved last season.
Yeah.
I think if you can kind of pair these things together, he could be a really good scorer for the team. And we talked about this when the team first acquired him in 2016. This is a guy who can play defense at a number of positions. Like, he can guard your bigs. You know, he can guard wings. He can guard ball handlers. And he's got the strength and the speed and the quickness to do so. And so if he has all these tools available to him and he's healthy and he's engaged and he is psychologically feeling confident and good about himself, this could be a really big season for him.
The question has never been whether or not Deion can score when he's in shape, or if Deion can defend at a high level when he's in shape, or if Deion can get to the rim and then finish at the rim when he's in shape. The question has always been, is he in shape? And the one thing that David Alexander and the DBC Fitness team does, not, I don't mean to be a shill for that program there, but if you look at their track record, it's really good. It is really good. I mean, LeBron James fixed his back in part because of the people that worked at DBC and actually hired one of the guys from DBC to just be his personal back guy, basically, his personal biomechanic, I guess that's what you would call those people.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Dwayne Wade completely refreshed his career. I mean, he couldn't play two games in three nights at one point. And he completely revamped his career and fixed his knee specifically because of the work and the biomechanics done over at DBC Fitness. You look at a guy like Victor Oladipo, who went from maybe who could have been considered a bust to maybe one of the top 15 players in the NBA, two-way players in the NBA, and they do work with NFL players and all these people that just are examples of fitness and consistency at their professional level. And so for Deion Waiters to get there and for David Alexander to tell you that he is basically treating his offseason like a full-time job, I think speaks volumes and has to be reassuring. And by the way, again, not to be a shill for that program, but I defer to them. I think I am buying in right now. Like, I am buying in. They are innocent until proven guilty. I'm buying in on Deion Waiters. Everything that they're saying, I'm buying right now. And the Instagram and everything like that, is very reassuring. He looks good.
He does. He does. He looks quick. He looks fast. He looks explosive. He looks strong. He's in great shape. And you're right. I don't think that Alexander has any reason to promote Deion over the top. Like, he doesn't have to be excessive in his praise.
Yeah. We've talked to people who are towing the line there. They just don't want to see anything bad. We can sense that.
Right. And to me, look, he's trained all-time greats like Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade.
The all-timest greatest in LeBron James, yes.
And to say that this is, you know, one of the most rewarding off-seasons that he's ever had because of seeing Deion, and I couldn't include it all in the piece, but one of the things that really stood out, it was he just kept describing how much Deion is embracing the work and getting there every day and doing everything that it takes well into the night, trying to stay on top of it and wanting to put his stamp on the league and tell everybody, look, this is the player I can be, and I'm certainly encouraged by it. Like, I didn't go into my conversation with him expecting that kind of effusive praise. At the same time, I'm very buoyed by it, and I really am encouraged. Yeah. And I think he's going to have a breakout season. Like, there's a lot of different things at play here. Like, obviously, as you mentioned before in the previous segment, Jimmy Butler's presence changes the way defenses handle this team. And I think Deion, you know, now that he's feeling healthy and good about himself, he can capitalize on that. It's up to anybody else other than Jimmy to kind of capitalize on this. Jimmy, we know what he's going to do. He's going to be fantastic. He's one of the best players in the league, and he's going to continue to be that. It's for everybody else to kind of step up, and I think Deion is ready and looking forward to this opportunity.
27 years old. The issue, I don't think that the issue with Deion has been necessarily the work. Maybe it hasn't been to that maniacal level that maybe it's at right now, but I don't think the question has ever been totally the work. I think it's just been his health. I mean, the ankle, the hips, the back. I mean, the stuff that has bothered him throughout his career. And if he's healthy now and his body is in, not if he's, the weight is one thing, right? But he's talking to you about, you know, changing his diet, changing the way that his body just moves, the explosiveness with which he can move and get to the basket. The issue has never been whether or not, when Deion is healthy, he's a really good scorer. He is really good at getting to the basket. I mean,
We talked about this last year, that even as heavy as he was coming back from ankle injury, he probably still had the quickest first step on the team.
He's got that innate talent to do it. If he's healthy, if he is the healthiest he's ever been, I don't think he's an all-star player. I think there's still inefficiency concerns and just overall game concerns with him, but he's close to it. I mean, he'll be an 18 points per game scorer, which is exactly what the Heat need, 18, 20 points per game. I mean, that's the best case scenario for Deion Waiters. Now, I don't know if he'll get there, but he's on track. And I think everything that we're reading, everything that we're seeing and hearing ought to be pretty positive if you're a Heat fan. Coming up next, how high can the Heat finish in the East? You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember, listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Saying nice things about the Miami Heat recently is Zach Lowe, who told Howard Beck on his podcast, The Full 48, that he projects that the Miami Heat will not only make the playoffs, but will finish third in the Eastern Conference. Now, David, I feel like Zach Lowe may be listening to us a little bit, because I don't remember when we had this conversation, and I'm being facetious, by the way, but I don't remember when we had this conversation. But I think you and I spoke about how high the Heat could finish, and I have maintained that the only two teams clearly above the Heat in the East are the Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't think it's crazy to think that the Heat could finish third. The Toronto Raptors, we don't know what they're going to look like post-Kawhi. The Boston Celtics, if the FIBA World Cup was any indication, not that good this year. I don't know. I'm not that optimistic. The Indiana Pacers are going to be without Oladipo probably until the new year. The Brooklyn Nets don't have Kevin Durant. They're led by Kyrie Irving. Who knows? The Orlando Magic and the Detroit Pistons are the other teams that made the playoffs last year. Big whoop. I see no reason why the Heat, with their coaching, with the 11th best player in the NBA in Jimmy Butler, and with all these guys coming back, and then jettisoning some of that depth that they didn't necessarily even need in the first place, and getting a guy like Tyler Hero in the draft who looked really good in Vegas, why couldn't they finish third?
No, there isn't any reason. I mean, you're absolutely right that we did talk about this at some point, and it's I don't even know if it's necessarily about Miami's strength as a team, but rather that there are legitimate questions about all the other teams in the Eastern Conference, aside from Milwaukee and Philadelphia. And given Miami's, one, that they have an established superstar who plays defense at a high level, that Miami has a clear-cut identity of being a defensive-first team, that they have Eric Spoelstra and the consistency of that coaching staff that has always managed to find a way to maximize the talent on that roster, it bodes well for Miami. So kudos to Zach Lowe. Like, he doesn't have to. He's talked about Miami in the past, and I think he's been, and I think he generally is, pretty straightforward. Like, he said in the past that, you know, it's an okay team that kind of over maximizes what's on that roster, and I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And now that he's high on them, I think it's because it's something that we've talked about for years now, that they didn't have a clear go-to option as a scorer. That's Jimmy Butler now. Not only somebody who can do it, but is willing to and does it at a very high level. And that kind of thing, now that you have that hierarchy clearly established, everybody else learns how to fall in place, and I think that bodes really well.
Every other team has a hole. You can't really look at this Heat roster and tell me where the hole is.
There are questions. I mean, let's
questions,
not,
sure, questions, but no holes, right? I mean, you look at Boston, who protects the rim for them? We don't even know who's starting at center for Boston next
year. Who guards
year.
At the point guard position? I mean, you got Marcus Smart backing up Kemba Walker, but right. It's not like Kemba's an excellent defender or anything like that.
I mean, the Heat have guys who can guard every position. You know, they can throw Justice Winslow at the opposing point guard. They have Jimmy Butler who could guard the elite wing players. They have Bam Adebayo who projects to be a really good rim protector and overall great defensive player in general. Guys like Kelly Olynyk who are underrated in that end. James Johnson, if he's healthy, very underrated at that end. All these, right. Like, I don't know what you have Goran Dragic or Deion Waiters. One of those guys is coming off the bench. So you have a potential elite, like, sixth man of the year type candidate guy playing for your second unit. You've got players up and down this roster. Again, I don't know if there is one hole for the Heat. Maybe it's backup center. That's about it. And I still think that Kelly Olynyk ends up filling in there a whole lot of minutes and kind of shoring up that rim protection issue a little bit. But other than that, I don't really see the hole on Miami's roster, especially, again, Milwaukee, Philadelphia. From a talent level, they're just far and away the best. But everybody in the East has holes or significant injuries causing holes, and the Heat just, they're right there. I see no reason why. And again, best coach in the Eastern Conference the Heat have. That helps.
If there's a team of those that kind of melange there of third through ninth or third through tenth maybe in the Eastern Conference, honestly, I have hopes, or not hopes, I have expectations that the Orlando Magic will probably be able to build on last year's success.
I think you're right.
Now, it could go either way for them. It could go either way. Like, if for them, because they have all these young players that are still trying to prove themselves, that could be a potentially, you know, disastrous recipe there. But at the same time, if they're able to congeal and Steve Clifford is able to kind of continue working with that group and get them to excel and play at a high level, then they could be a team that could, you know, upset Miami as far as the potential third seed in the East.
Well, I mean, what they would need is for somebody to have like a Pascal Siakam type of breakout season, Aaron Gordon, Jonathan Isaac, somebody like that. Because right now
that
they have,
seem likely.
It seems like they're in the, and not to take anything from Nikola Vucevic, but unless you're Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic, you're not really leading your team at that position to a top three or four seed in the conference, right? Right. So, yeah. And there might have been a little bit of contract year stuff happening there anyway. So,
sure.
So, you know, unless, you know, Orlando was sort of in the same boat as Miami was last year. Good role players, good roster, some up-and-comers, some things that you could point to for hope. But overall, who's the alpha dog there? Who's that top 15 player? And Miami has that now, just like Philadelphia has that, just like Milwaukee has that. I mean, Milwaukee has one top 15 player in Giannis. Philadelphia has one top 15 player in Joel Embiid. Now, you could argue with Philadelphia that guys like Al Horford and Ben Simmons are better than what the rest of the Heat have. And certainly with Milwaukee, Giannis might be the best player in the league, period. Not just the top 15 player, so that creates that ceiling, and we saw them win 60 games last year. But for Miami, they're right there. I see no reason why not. They could have Miami the third best player in the conference. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So, yeah, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't finish third in the East. Now, who knows?
Would you rank Jimmy over Ben Simmons?
Yes, absolutely. If the playoffs were any indication, I think that's 100%. Accurate. I've got Ben Simmons at the 20-something best player in the league right now, maybe. Probably in the 30s. I've got to redo my rankings, but
am I the only person in media who has never done like a top 100 players list?
100 is a lot, but you should probably do, like, to me, I think 40. Like, top 40, top 50. Yeah, you should carve out like a couple hours and just think about it.
Okay. I'll do that. Thank you, Wes.
Yeah, I do it weekly. I'm kidding. But yeah, it's something I like to do because I don't have anything else better to do. That's it for us today. You can connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.